This is Money Moves on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We welcome you in to Money Moves on VSiN, the sports betting network, alongside Jonathan Von Tobel. Stormy Bonantoni with you live as always in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. We got some controversy to get into, some big deals as well. But JVT, we have a game in Major League Baseball that's going to start in the next 5 to 10 minutes. So I feel like we need to jump off here, especially considering it's a pretty great pitching matchup as well. You've got the MLB strikeout leader in Jacob Mizorowski taking on the Reds ace in Chase Burns. Milwaukee, more than a $2 favorite in this spot. Low total as expected with these two on the hill at 7. Anything just quickly stand out to you before we get going?
Just like you're talking about, the total of 7 seems almost too easy at this point when you're looking at betting this thing under between Chase Burns and Jacob Mizorowski. So that might be something that's pretty tempting. How about a first 5 total of 3 shaded to the over at minus 125? So that might be worth looking at. Both guys come in here, and as we know, have been very dominant and really no question about it. But we'll say this, the lone blemish as you look at it, Chase Burns is coming off a performance. He pitched 6 on the road against Pittsburgh, gave up 5 earned, did strike out 10 though. So a little bit of a bounce back spot. And we just know where Mizorowski's getting priced. I mean, I think more often than not, you're maybe, from a probability standpoint, getting a little bit more coming back on Mizorowski just because he's priced so high at the top of the market. And if you're going to give me Chase Burns, a plus 160, asking the Reds to stay inside of a half run is only minus 105. It seems somewhat tempting.
Chase Burns, 9-1.
All right, fine, we'll bet it.
2.36 ERA here. What I want them to start doing is, can we get props for Jacob Mizorowski's just like miles per hour? The over-under for what he'll top out at. 105.5 the other day.
As we talked about with Mike, actually, last Friday about baseball data and what it is. I mean, it is a part of official baseball data,
right?
So you could theoretically put some props up on that. If I remember correctly, I think DraftKings during the Home Run Derby had like some exit velocity props,
yeah,
didn't they? Right?
They
didn't
do.
You hit one?
Yes, I did. Which, when we get to All-Star break and Home Run Derby time, which is coming up, let's definitely delve into that market once again.
So, crew, if I could, can we get the Reds-Brewers game here down here? Because
yes.
I now have the Reds plus a half run at minus 105.
Can't wait for you to be distracted for the next 2 hours. But fortunately, we haven't had first pitch yet, so there's still a chance for this segment. Let's set the table for everything else that's to come over the course of the next couple hours. Time to run it down.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is the Rundown.
Get excited, people. We are less than 48 hours away from the Super Bowl of competitive eating, a day for the dogs coming up on the 4th of July, and we're going to have co-founder of Major League Eating and legendary voice of the competition, George Shea, to help us break it all down in just a little bit. Yes, we know that Joey Chestnut and Mickey Sudo are massive favorites, but some alternate ways to dive into this thing, his perspective on the weather and what impact that might have on the competition. I am pumped for that talk.
I do enjoy the hot dog eating contest, but we'll call it your thing. So very much looking forward to you carrying me through that and talking with George about what the field's going to look like and the other intricacies of the hot dog eating contest and whether or not this is ever going to come to an end or if it's just whether or not Joey Chestnut wants to call it an end.
Curious the what kind of differential he will have between the next closest competitor. He's more in a competition with himself than anybody else at this point. But from my love to your affinity, we had a Brown blockbuster yesterday while you were sleeping, apparently. Celtic star Jaylen Brown shipped off to the rival Sixers for Paul George and several future draft picks. We'll hit this at length in 15 minutes, but your 30-second instant reaction.
I don't even know still at this moment what I'm supposed to say about that trade, to be quite honest with you. I have taken in a ton of content. I have looked at it over and over again. You've read it over and over again. There seems to be such a valley at times between the reporting around some of these transactions and what actually transpires. And the fact that a report comes out that they're asking for 5 first-round picks and you essentially end up flipping him for Paul George is absolute insanity. So I would say that I don't think this is going on a limb, a wildly disappointing trade for the Boston Celtics.
Trading one of your best players to your rival and taking on their injury-prone problem is a bold strategy, Cotton. We'll see if it pays off. Philly goes from 70-1 some shops to as low as 20-1 right now on DraftKings following the move for an NBA title. Boston, meanwhile, from your Eastern Conference short shot to win a title, 7-1 out to 13-1.
Yes, good.
In addition to our NBA talk, we'll have Tyler Shoemaker on the program later on in hour 2, get into some WNBA. We got a 3-game card there, but we're going to kick things off with chaos In the World Cup yesterday, it started with Belgium's ferocious comeback against Senegal, erasing a two-goal deficit in 3 minutes. They were reportedly 98-1 live in the 85th minute. They end up winning and advancing to face, guess who? The U.S., who their win yesterday, 2-0, was marred in controversy as well. Flo Balogun's red card heard round the world. U.S. men's national team, they win in advance after the win over Bosnia, 2-0, so we did cash the spread ultimately on there, despite being down Flo for 30 minutes. Before we give our thoughts on the red card, because we Americans who are diving into soccer this deeply for the first time in a long time are all of a sudden soccer rules analysts and experts, let's actually hear from a couple of people who know what they're talking about, starting with Team USA head coach Mauricio Pochettino, with his belief on what he saw.
For me, never is a red card. Watching after on TV, and never was the intention to step up of the player. That was a normal action in football that happened because by accident, and it's never intentional. That is why for me, it's never red card.
So I'm in total agreement there. How about the Fox Sports rules analyst, former FIFA referee as well, Mark Clattenburg? Does he agree with what Pochettino just said?
The problem you've got is, to reach a criteria of the red card, it has to be some speed, there has to be some force, and there has to be some malice. This lacked that. But what it does have, which is what the element of the VAR is hiding behind, is it endangers the safety of the opponent because of that foot-on-foot challenge, which could have acted and ended with a broken ankle. So what they've done is they've looked at the consequence of the challenge. However, in my opinion, this didn't endanger the safety of the opponent. Balogun doesn't even look for the foul. It's one of them where it happens in a split second. He puts his foot down and catches the opponent. It was an accidental challenge. And for me, this did not reach the criteria of a red card. And it shouldn't have been a VAR intervention.
So that's the thing that I keep on looking at here, JVT. Like, you hear those words like violent conduct, intent to injure. I mean, none of that was there from what I could see. But anytime you slow something down, similar to our conversation we had a week ago about, you know, Caitlin Clark and the still image of the throat shot, right? Mm-hmm. Anything that you slow down to that extent is going to look more damaging than it actually is. And according to a lot of these soccer analysts I've seen, they shouldn't have even been looking at slow images on VAR.
Yeah, we have that statement up there for me. The report there from ESPN about the statement made. Like, you're not supposed to do that. Referee based it on that slow motion angle, and that's always going to look a lot worse than it is. Look, I won't go the route of many pig-headed Americans, which is like, this is what's wrong with the sport. Like, I think really it just comes down to what we have heard from both Pochettino and the rules analyst there, which is just, look, there is no, the I word, intention, yes, in that challenge from Balogun to cause any sort of injury, no malice. And so that should be considered as part of the ruling. And it wasn't yesterday. And the big problem is not even just the individual result, because obviously they win, they move on. In fact, they score another goal, right, to win 2-0. But it's the fact that this now affects that team moving forward into their next meeting. That is a problem that, of course, the U.S. is going to have to live with. And now we just have to sit here and say, you got it wrong, but you move on. And yeah, that is the biggest problem, obviously, with all of this. The fact that he's going to miss the Flo Balogun in this next game. You've got to, I think, in some way, maybe think about how you handle red cards and the way you review them, but this is the incorrect call. I don't think there's really any question about it.
And I could be wrong, and maybe it's just because I haven't watched as much soccer compared to other major professional sports in America, but I feel like soccer officials have more say in the outcome of a game or in just how the game is played than any other, mm-hmm, right? Like, they can control moments like that. They can control how much time is going on the clock, when the game is going to end or when it's not. It's, at least in my perspective, very interesting, and I don't love it. It's why I liked hearing a rules official actually saying they disagreed with a call for once, considering we never see that in the NFL.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, but they're all buddies in the NFL.
But I was also disappointed in the broadcast at large in general. We know that Balogun's now going to miss the round of 16, but yep, how they didn't really hammer that home during the live broadcast was crazy to me. Okay. In the post game, of course, that's the entire talking point. That's sure, everything that we're discussing. But during the course of the they mentioned it once.
Yeah, that's pretty. I didn't really realize that. I was out of a bar, and obviously the sound's on, but you don't really pay attention to what's going on. My favorite of the broadcasting moments was, I think, like seconds before Malik Tillman's goal goes in the 82nd
what
minute.
What goal, by the way?
One of them. I don't know who was on the call, but one of the commentators just goes, "You know, it's just really an impossible ask to get him to try to score this. It's really hard to get it up and go down. So I don't know if you're going to go for that shot." And then 2 seconds later, he puts it in the back of the net.
So good. But having to play a man down for more than 30 30 minutes for them to still extend that lead, get the win. Huge. I loved Landon Donovan making the comment post game. He was, quote, so stressed in the last 15 minutes that even his fake hair was falling off. Yeah. So there's that. The U.S. men's national team now 25-1 to win the World Cup, the shortest odds we have ever seen for them. 11-1 to make the final, plus 320 to make the semi, minus 120 to make it to the quarterfinals now, beating a European team in the World Cup for the first time in 24 years. Very exciting. Second time in history they've won a knockout stage game. Now they do go on to face Belgium without Balogun. Ricardo Pepi is the one who is expected to step in to replace him. Not the elite striker and goal scorer that he is, but still very formidable, capable guy on that end. We've got home field advantage. What can we do here? USA getting bet up, by the way, as well. We've seen them go from, what, minus 110 and a pick them to minus 130 now.
Well, in all of this, we didn't even mention the chaos of the Belgium result from yesterday against Senegal.
I did mention it.
When you talk about the way that went down, how about a buddy of the show, Adam Hill, and a bad beat that he suffered yesterday. In game, he had bet Belgium to win on penalties. And the irony of getting a penalty kick on the final, like, 5 minutes or in the 5th minute of extra time, but you lose out because he meant PKs, obviously, was the bet. So you do win on a penalty, but ultimately not the penalty kicks that you needed.
Also, what did I say yesterday when we were previewing this game? Because I had both teams to score, so that comes through. But I said, if I was picking a side, I like the dog in Senegal. For them to give up the goals that they did late and then lose in that fashion, insane. And if you had a draw, too, you're crazy.
A nearly -2 in terms of goal. They should be expected goal differential for Belgium, and they still pull that win off.
Oh, my gosh. We have 3 more matches coming up today in the World Cup. We will preview those in a little bit later on in this hour. But when we return, we're going to get the deep dive, the full breakdown on this Jaylen Brown trade, what it means for both the Celtics and 76ers. And our guy, Justin Emery, producer extraordinaire, a very happy Sixers fan today.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. VSiN Pro gives you access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
With you back here on Money Moves. And how about this start for the Cincinnati Reds right off the rip? A solo shot from Sal Stewart against Jacob Mizorowski. Get him on the board. 1-0 right away.
Yep. So a good start for our plus half run. So we'll see if we can hold on to that. But I would doubt that this is going to be a rough start for Jacob Mizorowski. We'll see if that's the case. But got the first guy, swing and miss. And that was Ellie De La Cruz who went out on a strikeout. But Sal Stewart gets revenge for his teammate. And we'll see if the day can get this done here with a full count.
Long way to go, but we'll keep tabs on it.
Whiffed. So 2 strikeouts and 2 outs so far for Jacob Mizorowski.
Yeah, he's pretty good at that. Yep. He was, I believe, when we looked at it earlier, because our producer, Justin Emery, great with the strikeout leader props every day. Mizorowski was like plus 150 to be the leader on the day. Wild. What else is wild? The trade that came down yesterday in the NBA. And it has been a pretty crazy last 72 hours with free agency and all of this. But we see two Atlantic Division rivals pulling off a blockbuster last night. So Jaylen Brown goes to the 76ers for Paul George, 2 firsts and 2 second-round picks. You said last segment you still don't really know what to make of this.
Can't really wrap my head around it.
Before we get a little bit more in detail in this, I think that our audience should hear how you learned about the trade yesterday.
Why?
Because I texted you and I was like, okay, so give me your thoughts. And you text me back like an hour later, yo, I just woke up.
It was just one of those where I didn't mean to, you know, like, you know, my schedule, I like to wake up at like 3:34 in the morning and I don't get much sleep. Bedtime is probably around like 11 o'clock. So not the healthiest of habits when it comes to lack of sleep. And every once in a while that catches up with you. And every once in a while, you know, you kind of lay down for a second and you're like, all right, I'm going to just read something on my phone real quick. And then soon enough, it's 3:45. and you have no idea what just happened. You have a text from one of your teammates asking you, quick, give me your reaction to this complicated NBA transaction. And I was just like, I don't know, dude. I actually never responded to you guys afterwards.
Well, at least you weren't coming out of anesthesia like Bill Simmons, apparently. If you haven't seen this, I guess he was finishing a colonoscopy. This is what he said on the pod. At a medical facility around 3:20 Pacific time, he wakes up and says, quote, I'm not really coherent. I'm like, I think I'm dead. I think I died. The anesthesia killed me, and now I'm a dead person because he didn't believe what he was reading.
I mean, I wouldn't either. I don't think anybody did. It goes back to, as we brought up at the open of the show, this has been an interesting cycle of news for the NBA and specifically the reporters around the association, only because obviously we had this nonsense of, hey, it's going to happen today. Hey, it's going to happen today with Giannis Antetokounmpo. We had Chris Haynes report that Giannis was going to the Boston Celtics and then he got traded to the Miami Heat. We had reports that the Celtics were looking for draft packages of five first round picks. And then we get here where it's just, again, another somewhat misrepresentation of the situation that the Celtics were getting nowhere near those offers for five first-round selections, and he essentially goes for a flip of Paul George. It's a brutal look for the Boston Celtics, and it just makes you think, behind the scenes, there had to have been something more going on here. Because you don't make this trade with that package, and you don't do it now. Because you can just – there is no difference in making this deal now as opposed to making this deal in – August, September, when you get closer to training camp getting started. You're not in the building together. You're not playing games. You're not getting ready for camp. So for them to get this offer and for that to be the deal that they accept is really alarming from the Celtics' perspective.
Well, I think what everybody keeps saying is at this point, after you put him on the block for Giannis, the toothpaste is out of the tube. At that point, you can't really put it back in. With the relationship with he and Jason Tatum, because that's another layer to this, too. Apparently, over the last however many weeks, a lot of people had been calling about Jason Tatum. Celtics weren't willing to budge on that. Mm. Brown was always going to be the piece that they were willing to move, despite him coming off the best season of his career to this point. How much of that do you think has to do with maybe not just stuff behind the scenes, but like how analytically driven are they? Like, you would know better than I, based on some of the numbers that have come out about the team actually being better with him off the court and all of that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, we could play this from Windhorse. If you look at it from a net rating standpoint, like Jaylen Brown wasn't an overt positive when he was on the floor. A lot of that has to do with points scored, on, off, all that sort of thing. But I thought this is pretty interesting because a lot of people immediately, because I knew the second I saw this quote from Windhorse, because I was listening to the emergency podcast that he put together, I was like, oh boy, people are going to run with this because they're just going to look at points and shooting and they're not going to understand what he's saying here. But this is Brian Windhorse on his podcast, Hoop Collective, talking about what the Celtics felt like the value was of Derek White versus Jaylen Brown in last season's performances.
Look, I just know that the Celtics felt that even though Jaylen Brown was talking about himself for MVP, or there was this MVP campaign for Jaylen Brown, the Celtics did not feel that Jaylen had the best season on their team. And I don't mean Jason Tatum. I'm talking about they felt that Derek White had a better season.
Despite the fact he had a poor shooting season.
I agree.
But they felt he impacted winning the most.
And the statistics that people used to analyze.
Yeah, on, off, and whatnot.
Said that.
Yeah.
There was a wide valley in on-off differential for these two. When Derek White was on the floor, he improved the Celtics' net rating by 7.8 points every 100 possessions. When Jaylen Brown was on the floor, their net rating got worse by 5.6 points per 100 possessions. So we're talking about a difference between the two of, I'm not good at math, but I'm going to go with 13.4, somewhere around there. That's a really big chasm when you're talking about your impact in your team's net rating when you're on the floor. And then, you know, I'm glad you guys threw this up. So this is from our old colleague here, Ben Fox. But as he says, the Philadelphia 76ers had 101 odds on DK Sportsbook to be Jaylen Brown's next team. I actually went on a mini rant on Pod to the Futures about this because a lot of people like to cite these betting odds as gospel when it comes to these. Like, it's done. Look, he's on his way. These odds have no idea. They react to the next report. So had there been a report that the 76ers were in on Jaylen Brown, you know damn sure that those 76ers would have risen up that board. But that was not the case. So we're actually seeing something interesting now. In a lot of the prediction markets, Cleveland is getting bet hard for LeBron's next team.
Yeah.
I don't think that's an indication of anything. I think that's the betting market just trying to get, like, the market trying to get something there. I think he still goes to Golden State, but I would not take any movement or anything like that, especially when it comes to information-driven markets, like where will a player go next? We have no clue. But the bottom line here is, It's a really weird deal. Jaylen Brown clearly had some issues with the Celtics. I don't agree with Boston trading him now, because you are right in all the points that you made, but all those points can remain true, and you could just sit back and wait till before the preseason camp begins and then get rid of him then, and maybe a deal becomes better.
To your point real quickly on LeBron, because I did just pull that up. Golden State, when we had this conversation yesterday, was the leader in the clubhouse at 42%. They were as high at some traditional sports books as minus 500.
Yeah.
Today, Cleveland is in the driver's seat on Polymarket, 42%, Golden State, 31%, Miami, 13%. So just to put some numbers to that thought that you had on that number getting driven up. Meanwhile, the numbers as it pertains to this trade, Philly goes from 70-1 some shops to win an NBA title down to as low as 20-1 at DraftKings following the move. Boston, that you haven't liked them as the leader in the clubhouse in the Eastern Conference anyways, they take a step back in the East and for an NBA title go from 7-1 to 13-1. Philly, meanwhile, just
behind
them.
These are to win
them.
The finals, correct?
To win the finals, yes.
Yeah, sorry, let's read it.
In the Eastern, well, they were the short shot of the Eastern Conference.
No, I just want to clarify for people because they are still the second shot on the board to win the East, and I still do not agree with that at all when it comes to the Boston Celtics.
Plus 425 behind the Knicks at plus 320. The 76ers, though, sitting there at plus 750. What does this do for Philly in your eyes?
I mean, it makes them an immediate contender in the Eastern Conference. They kind of were already on the fringes of that with how talented they could be. You know, Zach brought this up on the podcast when we were talking about it on Hardwood Handicappers. One of the more underrated moves that Philly had made in this little free agency cycle that is not going to make a ton of headlines is the fact that they went out and got Dean Wade. So that really gives them some depth when you look at the wing position and what you can do with him. But now you're talking about a pretty talented offensive group of Tyrese Maxey, VJ Edgecombe, Jaylen Brown, and Joel Embiid. Now you have Dean Wade to slot in there to play along the wing as well to give you a defensive option that can space the floor. Yeah, I think you really like what you're working with at the top end of this roster for Philadelphia. I think you can quibble with the overall depth and what you're looking at all the other positions, you know, specifically guard, like how does that backup guard spot look when Tyrese Maxey's not on the floor and whatnot. But for the most part, this is one of the stronger starting fives in the association if Joel Embiid is fully healthy, which is always a question. But there is no question that we have seen. Look, Jaylen Brown, let's throw all the analytics out of the window. Jaylen Brown won a Conference Finals MVP and an NBA Finals MVP, and the dude has been absolutely nails in some of these biggest moments. He deserves the respect of being one of the top 15-ish, top 10 players in the NBA, closer to 15 or 10 than a 1. But either way, he's a gamer, dude, and he's going to make them better. And even if Embiid misses time, you're going to be good having him out there with Tyrese Maxey.
Well, and what did he just finish in MVP voting at large, too? Like sixth or something.
I don't buy the Celtics stuff. Plus 425. Like, what are we doing?
Okay. Words cannot describe how excited I am for what's to come on the show. I know this was a great conversation, but nothing quite compares to my love and affinity for the 4th of July hot dog eating contest. Mm-hmm. George Shea, voice of the whole thing. You hear those incredible introductions that he does for all of these guys. We're going to have one special for him coming up next segment as well, so get ready for that. Speaking of the 4th of July, need to remind you, we're bringing back something we very rarely do here at the network, a multi-year VSiN Pro subscription in honor of the 4th. For this week only, you can get 2 full years of VSiN Pro, $299. So that's access through July of 2028 at about 70% off what our usual monthly price is going to be. That'll get you everything we do here, the daily best bets, the real-time bet splits, the unlimited articles, AI-powered prop projections, and so much more, as well as our NFL betting guide that's out now, the college football betting guide that's going to be coming up soon. But the 4th of July offer disappears after July 7th. Head over to vsin.com/subscribe now to lock in the 2 years of VSiN Pro for that discounted price. That's vsin.com/subscribe. George Shea talking 4th of July next.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, the time has come to discuss what can only be termed a day for the dogs coming up Saturday, the 4th of July. Yes, a day for independence, but also a day for gluttony, excess, and fun. When the last stadium has emptied, when the final scoreboard has gone dark, when history asks who convinced us that heroes could be measured in hot dogs, one voice will still echo. For decades, he has stood before champions as though summoning warriors to Mount Olympus, transforming ordinary men and women into immortals with mustard belts and showing millions that destiny could be decided by the very next bite. Please welcome that voice, the ringmaster of excess, co-founder of Major League Eating, and MC of the Nathan Michigan's famous hot dog eating contest, George Shea. Welcome, George. How are you today?
Thank you very much for having me. I am honored. I am honored. We are going to have to get you to the 4th of July as an announcer.
George, it's only my dream. I kid you not, the Super Bowl of Major League Eating, the Nathan's famous 4th of July hot dog eating contest, is a holiday in my household. And I am so curious to get your thoughts on what this is all going to look like this weekend. For the novice that might not know about Major League Eating, you need to know how much weather can impact this kind of stuff. And I've been looking at the heat and humidity. I'm a little bit nervous for some of these people that might be trying to break previous best world records, all of that kind of stuff. What can you tell us about what we should expect out there on Coney Island?
Well, first of all, I appreciate the fact that you really know the contest and that you've watched. I do appreciate that, and it's an honor. I think what we're going to have with the heat is a real issue. It will definitely, this is all just my view, it will definitely impact the numbers. I think it will impact some people more than others. I think that, Joey Chestnut would still have an edge over everybody. I don't think it would change the dynamics of who might win unless, for some reason, he suffers more under the heat than Pat Bertoletti, who's eaten 58 hot dogs and buns. Joey, usually good, for something in the 70 range, so about 10 or 12 or more above Pat Bertoletti. So it would have to be a very significant dip on Joey's part, I think, to lose that. But without any question, it's going to stress out the eaters and the audience, and for that case, me, in a blue blazer, right? So I do think it'll be, low to mid-90s, and so that'll be the issue, and I think brilliant sun. So we'll see what happens.
George, can you tell us a little bit about Patrick Bertoletti? Because in the betting market, he has gotten a little support. He's down from 9-1 to 8-1 right now, and Joey Chestnut went from -2,000 to -1,800. So it seems like there's some out there that believe Pat can give him a little bit of a run.
Well, I would say this, I have to be really careful about this. And so anything that sure. insight I would give you would just be sort of George Shea's unstudied insight not to be used, because the fact of the matter is, there are a lot of lines involved and other sponsors. But I think that Patrick Bertoletti is without question the most likely to beat Joey if Joey stumbles, right? That's really the way it would have to be. Now, you can get into the fact of what the over-under is, and I don't even want to know, but whether or not you should bet one or the other. But I think Joey would still, in every single case, be the dominant favorite. But there are three people who would be right there if he stumbles, and that would be Patrick Bertoletti first and foremost, and then Jeffrey Esper of Massachusetts and James Webb of Australia. Now, Nick Werry can do 48 to 50, that range. But, these other guys are all above 50. So I think that anybody who's going to really bet on this is going to think that Joey's going to win. Another interesting race is the women's race. And you have Michelle Lesko, who's from Tucson, Arizona, a little bit more used to this sort of intense heat, going against Miki Sudo. And, Miki really has had a sort of not the time to practice, I think, that she has in the past. So another interesting race to watch.
Well, and she last year, despite the record that she had in 2024 of 51 and the weather conditions we had last year, took a big step back with only 33. I remember her saying on the dais afterwards how disappointed she was that she wasn't able to get them down as easily as she had in the past. But even then, I feel like she has just been such leaps and bounds above everybody else. The only time that she didn't get the muster belt in the last 12 years was when she was giving birth to her son. Is it on both sides always going to be the haves and the have-nots with Joey Chestnut and Miki Sudo?
It's so interesting. I thought no one would ever beat Kobayashi, right? In 2001, he came, the record then was 25. He ate 50, 5-0. And then he was very dominant for 6 years. And I thought literally no one could ever beat him. And then Joey came and he beat him. And he beat him again and he beat him again. And now he's going for his 18th victory. So everybody always can be beaten. It's really just a matter of when. And I think that once again, if you're doing sort of a sober analysis of this, you have to think both Mickey and Joey have a big advantage over everybody else, given their performance in years past. However, you know, Mickey last year wasn't really there with her numbers, but neither was Michelle. So Michelle could eat that kind of mid-30s. The question is, will she? And the other item here is that in order to have the hot dogs done, they cannot be cooked too long before the contest, and they cannot be cooked too close to the contest. So the guys are out back with, like, these massive griddles cooking thousands of hot dogs, and they bring them all out, and they put them on the table so that they have time to cool, because you would not want them right off the grill, right? So, however, if they're in the sun and it's 95 degrees, that is going to dry out the bun, right? So there's going to be an impact on this. And I think some of that happened last year when the hot dogs may have come out just a little early and it toughened them up and dropped the numbers. So we'll see what happens this year. But 95, think of it. You put a hot dog in a bun out for 15 minutes, that's going to have an effect.
You know, I feel like in years past, I've seen a lot more interviews with a lot of these eaters coming into the competition, talking about some of their goals or how they've been feeling. And I haven't seen as much of that content this week. So I am curious for some of these guys, like Jeffrey Esper, for example, who has finished second a handful of times in recent history, peaked at 53 in 2024. If he's somebody that could climb back up, maybe not to Bertoletti standards, but or maybe he could in your eyes. Like, where is he at as he continues to age? And I would ask the same thing of James Webb, where he sits in your mind.
When I look at James Webb, who I'm guessing is somewhere around 40 years old, I think of him as the future. And the reason for that is he's a very fierce competitor. And they all are. They all are. But some people, it's just like, it means so much to them. I look at what James has done, and he has 7 world records, and he's a relative newcomer to the sport. But, you know, it's very difficult to distinguish in any meaningful way on numbers and on the 4th of July between Jeffrey Esper, James Webb, and Patrick Bertoletti, and for that matter, Nick Wherry. They'll all be within 5 of each other. The question is, are you a gamer, right? Do you have that Michael Jordan kind of approach? Or really it's disposition, and that's what Joey has, right? And Pat has it, certainly, to some degree. But the question is, when the pressure's on, do you perform better? And Joey does. So I'm not sure the rest of them do. And maybe it's a matter of belief. Maybe they're up there just thinking, I'm never going to be Joey, and then that changes their sort of mental state. So I do think, you know, when you look at this as a sport, you know, in a pure play kind of way, it would be better if we had the sort of Lakers Celtics of the late 80s, when you just never know what's going to happen, and it's very tense. We have had a dominant Joey Chestnut and a dominant Mickey Sudo for a decade, and you know, so it's not, you're not getting that kind of back and forth competition. And in some ways, people almost tune in to see if Joey can break his record, and almost like this sort of like, I'm just checking in on my patriotic duty, you know, touching base with America to see Joey Chestnut. It's a very unusual kind of appeal, but people do watch, and they watch regardless of whether or not Joey's going to win.
George, we've only got about 20 seconds left with you, but my producer will kill me if I don't ask where you sit on condiments for a hot dog. Do you have a favorite? Do you not do ketchup? What's the word?
Ketchup and sauerkraut. I mean, I'm sorry. So, mustard and sauerkraut. Mustard and sauerkraut. Old school.
Are you of the crowd that doesn't believe once you're over 18 you should have ketchup on a hot dog?
Over 12. You got to stop.
George, nobody does it better than you. Have an amazing time on Saturday. Thank you so much for doing this. Happy early 4th.
Okay, thank you very much.
George Shea, everybody. The action, by the way, getting underway from the corner of Surf and Stillwell on Coney Island at 10:45 Eastern with the women's competition, then the men taking center stage at noon. It's going to be awesome.
Are they still in a lemonade chug?
Yes.
The beginning, too?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's how it starts, right?
I really do enjoy the lemonade jug quite a bit.
I asked him the question specifically about Webb and Esper because there are some exact results that you can pair Joey Chestnut into. Like, Chestnut Bertoletti is $4. Who wants to do that? But Chestnut Webb, 7-1. Chestnut Esper, 8-1. Chestnut Weary, who he mentioned, 15-1. So some other bang for your buck options if you think someone can leapfrog for that second spot.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, guys, I'm sorry, but George Shea is the absolute coolest. That was such a fangirl segment for me.
Dude, you did well. He was really good.
He is the man. I can't wait for the 4th of July. Tomorrow, by the way, we'll follow up on that conversation, breaking down all of the over-under possibilities for how many hot dogs will be consumed. We'll play you some sound from Joey Chestnut and others. So get excited for that full breakdown coming up tomorrow. A lot of, I think, potential bang for your buck options, despite Joey Chestnut being minus 2,000 favorite and Mickey Sudo being a massive favorite as well. You could argue that she should be a bigger favorite than Joey on the other side with the way that she's had margin of victory against the other women in the competition. But we will save that conversation for tomorrow. Just really appreciate George Shea lending his time. If you missed the conversation, you want to catch up with it, as soon as this hour is finished, we will be uploading it to the Money Moves podcast feed so you can listen on your own time later on today. We have so much more to get to today in the world of sports, though. Three more matches to come in the World Cup, one of which is going to get underway in just about 15 minutes or so in Spain and Austria. And we're seeing some late money here come in on Austria. Spain was -1,000 to advance, still a very heavy favorite at -800, but pretty decent price shift here. Austria now 5-1 to advance. They're 9-1 on the 90-minute money line. Spain, about $3 there. I did end up playing Spain on the spread, -1.5, a team that is yet to concede a goal in this tournament. And I know they had that opening game shocker in group play, the scoreless draw to Cape Verde. Cruise through the stage, though, and all with three clean sheets. They have a 34-game unbeaten streak in the round of 32, and I don't think that they have played to their full capabilities yet. Austria feels like a good opponent on the other side for them to finally get the offense they've been looking for.
Yeah, so I ended up tailing our guy Alex Blowers here on Spain to win to nil at even money is where I found it. You've mentioned the defense for Spain has been tremendous here. They expect the goal number for them just a half goal through their group match play so far. They've been absolutely tremendous on that end. And as Blowers points out in his article, too, I mean, this is a team that's pretty banged up front as well, dealing with some of those injuries. And it may be a reason why they've not been as effective on offense. So instead of risking it and asking them to win by multiple goals, I think ask them to win to nil and shut out another opponent. I think that's definitely something they could do here against Austria. I think that if you look at Austria as well and the way that they have played up to this point, obviously deserving the respect that they have, but not overtly impressive in terms of their own metrics and the chances that they've generated so far. So I think there's a pretty good shot that the Spain team can hold them down. Maybe they win 1-0, maybe they win 2, so you can get that done. But Spain to win a nil at even money, I thought was a worth playing, so that's what I did.
So I didn't even think about that angle. I was going to suggest to you Austria not to score, because just under half a goal is -125, but if you're getting even money for the outcome that we all presume is going to be paired with that angle, I like that a lot better. Even money, I might join you on that. Just add it to the account. Because I feel like that's a very possible outcome. Their defense and possession time has been unreal, despite what some of those scoring outputs have been. Spain's goalie, Unai Simón, is great, but he's only even had to make, four true saves?
He's Freddie Anderson.
Yeah, right?
Right.
That's a great way to put it.
He has not faced...
We'll talk about him later, by the way. He has got a new home.
Yeah, so he has not faced really any shots or high danger chances or anything, so you're putting in some pretty good performances.
So look at this, though. So Spain, a top five possession team in the field for the World Cup at large right now, made me look a little bit closer at Austria's 2-0 loss to Argentina, as they are also a top five possession team in the competition. They only had one shot on target, 6 attempts, and you already mentioned the half a goal, unexpected goals. So I think that's a great angle. The expected goal differential for Spain per 90 minutes, +161 compared to Austria's -0.23. Austria is not a particularly strong defensive team, giving up multiple goals in two of their three group stage matches. So hopefully we can get over the hump with all of these plays on Spain and they play to their capabilities. How about Portugal and Croatia? But my big question here for this second match of the day is do we trust this Portugal team? What do we do with them at this point? Because I kind of like the idea of taking a shot on Croatia, not going to lie, or maybe like those double chance bets.
Why is that?
well, Portugal, you beat Uzbekistan 5-0, and we're supposed to believe
I'm
that you're good
you,
all
I'm
of a sudden.
You, explain to you, like that.
No, so I'm just personally.
You looked like you took offense to the question. Like, no, I want to hear your logic.
I think, and I don't want to like be another person that's jumping on the like let's trash on Cristiano Ronaldo bandwagon,
sure.
But the struggles in the knockout rounds have been well documented for him, and the way that he is. His presence alone has kind of changed the way this team plays offensively matters. And they're not turning the ball over in the midfield. They're not getting any of those extra chances. And I think his lack of, at least from what I've heard from a lot of these analysts that are watching and living, eating and breathing this stuff, his lack of effort has caused a lot of problems for them, and their coach refuses to sit him.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. You had a negative expected goal differential in your game against Colombia. A lot of your production from an expected goal standpoint on offense comes from that game against Uzbekistan, in which you absolutely dominated them. And then you go back to your game against the Congo, and again,
just fell right back to it.
You turned in a performance in which, to your point, not only in terms of expected goals, where you had a negative differential to start group play, but while you dominated possession, you still were down in terms of shots on goal as well. So you look over all of this, and it would seem statistically that Portugal has the profile of a team that is, for lack of a better term, lucky to be here, and they've not really played that well. So I would say that I would be with you if you're looking at the other side of this and going, at the very least from a pricing standpoint, where are we? You know, on a three-way, to lay $140 with Portugal seems like something I would not want to do personally, knowing the overall profile of what they've turned in so far in the group play stage.
And I know Croatia's not the best defensive team. They've given up a lot of shots. Not a lot of goals, though, aside from the England matchup, which we know how good England can be and the striking ability they have. But they are pretty physical defensively. And I was looking at the total at 2.5 as well, because if they play well defensively, and even if they're middling defensively, Portugal struggled so much scoring, Portugal, for their offensive pitfalls, has played really well on D. So they conceded just one goal all tournament so far. Croatia finished the group stage with the third fewest shots and fifth fewest expected goals from a scoring standpoint. So I didn't play anything yet. I might get to it a little bit later. Lean under, and also, like I said, maybe the double chance with Croatia, maybe even the draw at plus 280. I think there are a few plus money angles that are worth at least looking at in this game, with Portugal not playing as well as we all expected them to.
And we should be clear, like, to your point about the way that these games were played so far too, you know, Croatia, a lot of the big chances they allowed were in that England game. That's why I think their expected goal against mark is so high. And again, we're talking small sample sizes, as we always have throughout handicapping these games. But in the last two, they were much better in terms of the chances they gave up, expected goals against and whatnot. So against a foe that has had its own issues on offense, looking somewhat constipated in its attack, I think that you could look at Croatia to be pretty live here. Maybe even a draw in regulation when you're talking about just over 2-1. Because again, this series can be nearly 3-1. Because this does seem like a game that would be pretty tightly contested. And even if you do draw blood, you're talking about two teams that are so tightly wound with one another, I think, that you could probably look at a 1-1 draw going into the end of regulation or an extra time. Now, we have seen a lot of these nutty goals in extra time near the end of regulation that have gotten these teams over the hump. But just we're pointing out here that these two teams, I think, from a pricing standpoint, were a little off, which means there's a little value in the 4-1, and there's probably a little value in the draw as well.
So that match will be coming up at 4 Pacific, 7 Eastern in Toronto. Elsewhere in Canada, BC Place in Vancouver, 8 Pacific, 11 Eastern, Switzerland and Algeria. On the 90-minute three-way, Switzerland minus 105 favorites, Algeria plus 340. The draw, a plus 230 price. Meanwhile, just to advance, Switzerland minus 220, Algeria plus 175. I like Switzerland here. Won the group, bested Bosnia 4-1, Canada 2-1. Algeria just had that crazy matchup with Austria where they drew 3-3 last time out. They keep conceding goals. I just don't feel like their defense has enough to contain what the Swiss have on the other side. I also lean Switzerland team total over 1.5 that you can get at a good plus money price, plus 108 I'm seeing right now.
I'm with you. I mean, I thought the Swiss side so far has been really impressive on offense. And obviously you have some tilted results in that direction. But still, I think they have been really fun to watch. And even in their draw with Qatar, you look at that, and statistically that was a game which they probably should have had a much better result. So I'm with you in the side of this has been wildly impressive for Switzerland. And at even money, you're not laying a price to ask them to win in regulation. I think it's pretty fair. I know you like some of these goal and a half, so you've been playing in this one. I wouldn't say -1.5 at a plus price would be like shaking my head at that at all.
Yeah, the spread in that one, plus 130 if you want to lay the goal and a half with Switzerland. If you just want to take them over a goal and a half team total for them to score themselves, again, that's around plus 105 to plus 108. I just played Switzerland on the money line, minus 105 earlier this morning. Maybe I should. Like, I don't know. There's like 80 different ways that I want to get involved in these games. I've actually, for somebody who was such an epic failure, betting the Stanley Cup final when hockey is my sport, to be doing as well as I am betting a sport that I know nothing about is kind of wild.
Just keep going.
But I'm going to try to ride the wave, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a lot of fun. While we're talking football, by the way, football season in the American landscape will be here before we know it. And here where we're broadcasting from at Circa Resort and Casino, that means contest season is upon us as well. And nobody does it better than Circa. Three major contests, entries starting at $1,000, all with no rake. So that means every single dollar is staying in the prize pool for us. Circa Million is 18 weeks, 128 ways to win, making those picks against the spread. Circa Survivor, you pick one winner each week, last one standing wins. And for the high rollers, $100,000 entry, Circa Grandissimo. You big spenders, you get a big payout as well. Enter in Nevada, play from anywhere, $30 million guaranteed. You want to learn more, head over to circasports.com. That's where you can get more details. Again, circasports.com. We're going to step aside here when we come back to the W. We go. Excited to have Tyler Shoemaker in town. He's going to hang out in studio, get some best bets for the three-game WNBA card. Don't go anywhere. We're resetting for hour two. Coming up after this on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.